Hallo, so schön, dass du da bist, hier beim Podcast Happy, Holy and Confident, dein Podcast fürs Herz und den Verstand. Mein Name ist Laura Marlina Seiler und ich nehme dich hier in diesem Podcast mit in meine Welt. Wir reden über Spiritualität, natürlich. Wir reden über persönliche Weiterentwicklung. Ich rede mit unfassbar tollen Menschen, die einfach unglaubliche Geschichten haben, die Experten sind auf ihren Gebieten. Und immer, worum es hier geht in diesem Podcast, ist, wie kannst du in deine Kraft kommen? Wie kannst du vielleicht einen Perspektivwechsel bekommen? Wie kannst du, wenn du gerade das Gefühl hast, es geht nicht weiter, Hoffnung schöpfen? Also hier ist quasi dein Ort zum Aufladen, zum Ankommen, zum Entspannen, zum Lachen. Und ja, dass wir einfach eine wundervolle Zeit miteinander haben. Also schön, dass du da bist. John! Hi, I'm so excited, really, to have you back on the show.
I feel like when you
show.
Do that, I need to reach out and like knuckle you or hold hands for a second.
Yeah, it's so nice.
It is that amazing energy.
It's so nice. Really, I'm so happy to have you here in my home, to have
so
you here
beautiful.
And to have a nice walk afterwards here in the forest and to show you around and welcome
Thank
to the show.
Thank you for the kind invitation. I love being in this space, this energy.
So we were just trying to remember when we did the last interview, because I think we did like 20 or something. I lost the count.
I remember my very first one. I was sitting in this little hotel room via Zoom. The room was dark, nothing. And so then to be in here, it's like, okay, things have changed a little.
Things have changed a little. And so the last conversation we had about like parenting,
yeah.
Which was a beautiful conversation.
Yes.
We all cried a lot. So whoever hasn't listened to that one, listen to that one as well. So the last 2 years, what would you say has been like, because I feel like a year sometimes has like this overall theme, like
yeah.
A theme, you have the feeling there's something you learn or you have to go through, you have to process.
Right.
So if we think about the last 2 years, what would you say were 20, what was it then, 23, 24? What were the themes life gave you to grow or to learn about?
Yeah, it's funny. We were talking offline before we started a tiny bit about this and that my daughter is now 17. And so in the last 2 years, it has gone from, I would still see her quite a bit. I would drive her to school. I would pick her up after school to now I see her in a totally different light. Now it's our house is a destination of teenagers. And so I hear about boyfriend problems, girlfriend problems. I'm at this job and I have this terrible boss or this crazy customer came in and this is what I'm struggling with school. And so it has been this interesting evolution of seeing teenagers at this juncture of getting ready to go off at this next huge phase of their life where they're going to be independent and on their own. And so I don't know why, but I feel this compelling urge to help them like get the stuff that I wish I would have known at that point. Mm. Not that I have any regrets about my life at this point. But I think I was about 10 to 15 years late to the game. You know, like, oh, if I'd have only known that stuff when I was 18, 20, 25. And so I think of it in terms of foundations, that if I can help them with the foundational pieces of life, they'll have enough confidence and the rest of the skill set that they can grow it wherever they want to grow it.
Amazing. So I feel like 99% of the world needs that foundation. So no matter the age the person is in. So what would you say are parts of that foundation that someone who's maybe listening right now and goes like, yeah, when I was 18, I actually would have liked to known that. So what are you teaching your daughter at the moment?
Yeah, so this is really funny. One of the books that I have written, which I think we've talked about, is sort of short little snippets of concepts that have hit me. And one of them is this anger is a manifestation of fear. And so one of my daughter's friends was driving them somewhere. And I have a copy of that book in the back. And I sometimes randomly will be in a store and I'll just get an intuitive sense like this is the right moment for that person. And so I will walk into the store with somewhat embarrassment and be like, I know this is going to sound crazy, but you just checked me out a minute ago. And something tells me that this book is for you. And I just wanted to give this to you. So anyway, I had one in the back and her friend was reading it. And she turns to my daughter and she's like, oh, now I know where you get a lot of this stuff. Because my daughter had been having a conversation with her boyfriend and she was asking him in a kind and like genuine way, but he was upset about something and she was saying, what are you afraid of right now? And he was like, I'm not afraid of anything. She's like, okay, but if you really think about it, anger is a manifestation of fear. So what is it in this moment? And so it's just funny to see how early in life they are already thinking about these things. And so, yeah, it seems like a small thing, but imagine if you had an understanding of that early in the game and how that would change the way that you restructure your life and restructure the fears that you have. So, yeah, it's fun stuff.
So let's dive into that because it makes sense that anger is just born out of fear. At the same time, often the anger is like the feeling that kind of protects you from feeling the fear. How can we go from the anger to feeling safe enough to feel the fear, to process what's really there?
Yeah, I'll give you some examples from my own life. And so if you were in line at the TSA at the airport, and this has happened with me and my family, like I rarely lose it. Like I'm pretty chill most of the time, but every once in a while, something happens which just sort of hits that spark. TSA line is not the great place for it, quite frankly, as my family will attest to. But when I see someone acting in a unnecessary, aggressive, bullying behavior towards people that are in a lesser position, either because the situation itself puts that person in power. So it'd be like a TSA person who is harassing a mother with small children about not getting the stroller on there fast enough or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I just can't help myself. Like, I'm like, hey, dude, like cut her some slack. She's trying to get this stuff together, right?
Yeah.
And so if I ask myself, what am I afraid of in that moment? Why does the anger rise? It's because I don't want to believe that the bad people will eventually overshadow the good people. Mm-hmm. That is the fear. But it's somewhat of an irrational fear because I've seen enough where the good people are able to overcome those situations, but there's still, for some reason, a piece of me which fears that if we don't step up in those moments, that the bad person will destroy that person's life in some capacity. So not necessarily rational all the time, but that's sort of the way it goes. But the takeaway for me is that when I break it down and I ask myself, what am I really afraid of in that moment? I realize like, okay, yeah, that person's being a jerk to that lady. But if the three of us in line help her out, we can overshadow the impact of that person. Mm. So then the fear becomes unnecessary and irrational.
So you kind of turn away from the, so you acknowledge the fear. Yeah. And at the same time, you ask yourself, what would be the action out of love that I could bring to the situation?
Or is the fear even rational? Mm-hmm. You know, so the idea came to me, I can't remember if we've talked about this in the past, but the idea came to me because I was driving in the car when my daughter was really little. Someone cut us off on the road and I was instantly angry because they almost hit us. And I was feeling the venting and the frustration and the anger. And I was holding that for minutes as they were racing down the road. But at some point it clicked in, like they're already 10K down the road. Like the moment is over, it's past. So why am I still angry? And I was angry because they don't realize that my daughter is in the back and she's only two. And I love this person so much and they could have hurt her. Mm-hmm. But then when you step back from it, you're like, well, but the moment is over. They didn't hurt her and the situation is past. So I don't need to hang on to that anger. It's gone, you know? So yeah, been a very useful thing for me.
So looking at it like from a meta level perspective, would you say that one of the main things that we could all learn as a foundation towards life is consciousness, like to be conscious and aware of what is, where it comes from, and how we can like navigate it?
Yeah, it's such a powerful thing when we realize that we are not just in this existence, but we're actually the observer to the existence that we're in. And if someone who's watching this has never thought about this before, just take a piece of paper and start writing your name. And realize that you are observing yourself writing your name. Mm. Well, who's the one observing? This tiny little act, though, demonstrates one of the most powerful and important pieces of the human experience. that we are not just this. We are also the observer of all this. And so that enables us to put a tiny filter between our brain and our mouth, which is one of the greatest things that we can do in life. And it also enables us to observe our physical and brain reactions to things. Mm-hmm. Well, if I'm more than just this, now I can start making changes. It's not just automatic, right? It's not just this is who I am. That line is not true. This may be who you are this second, but this can change in a heartbeat with one foundational element that changes the way you look at life.
What would you say was or is the most difficult and challenging emotion for you to deal with?
Oh, let's see. The most difficult and challenging emotion. That's really tough. I go kind of back to the anger thing, I guess, because I don't have it very often. But when I have it, it's still a hot button.
Mm-hmm. But let's go into this situation, because for me, and I, you have a similar question in your book. I will try to find it later, like how to get out of like a depressive state.
Funny that you're choosing that one, mm-hmm. because that was the one that my intuition just mm-hmm. flung into my mm-hmm. head right now. Yeah. Yeah.
So if we are like, because for me, like I feel so much,
yeah,
like in all directions. I think it's a blessing, but also sometimes it feels like a curse. Mm-hmm. No, it's not a curse, but it's like sometimes it's really difficult for me to navigate my emotions, especially both actually, because I can get really excited and then I make quick decisions. And then afterwards I go like, maybe I should have thought about that twice. So like my really good emotions bring right. me sometimes into difficult situations.
Right.
But also like my like strong, like let's say negative emotions like fear or anger or sadness. Sometimes it's difficult for me to get out of it.
Yes.
I feel that like I 100% of course agree that we are the observer. And I feel like sometimes when we are like in the middle of an emotion, it's like so difficult to be like, oh, wait, I'm the observer. I can right. just watch my emotion. And at the same time, like my body is just freaking out of yeah. emotion. So yeah. To make it more practical in that situation, in the line of like the security thing, how can we calm down? How can we come to this place where we can then go to observe?
Yeah, I'll put it in the context of the question you were referencing, because in order to do the book, one of the things that was required if I was going to do it in an authentic state was to literally put all the cards on the table.
Mm.
So when you get a question, how do you deal with sadness and depression? The only way I can honestly answer that is to be honest. And from an outside perspective, people see you in snippets. They see you in a short interview. They even see you in our interview, which was beautiful. And I loved it, talking about parenting. But talking about parenting is not the topic that is going to bring me into a state of depression. And so someone watching that content would think, no, he's like, he doesn't deal with that. And that's totally not true. I have times that it just feels like the world is so flipping heavy and dark. And I describe in the book the emotion associated with that or the feeling. And it's like a heavy, heavy cloud that's sitting on top of me. And everything starts to feel pointless. As if it doesn't matter, there is no meaning behind it, why bother? And what I do in those situations, and I can't say that I can exit that situation as fast as I can enter it. Let's put it that way. But what has helped me is if I allow myself to sit in that space as opposed to just trying to run away from it and ask myself, what got me here? You know? Because although I can't always control all the variables in my life, if I know what got me here, I might be able to make some adjustments so I don't find myself there as frequently or as deep in the hole. And so what gets me there is when I stop feeling free. Mm. When people are imposing things upon my world, when situations are out of my control, and I'm not a control freak about it, but when it's something big that I feel is absolutely limiting my desire to fulfill my life's purpose, that is what sends me down the dark hole. Mm. And I'm not just talking about life purpose, like doing stuff like this, which is definitely a piece of my life purpose. It can be, I feel part of my life purpose is to be the father that I want to be. And when something is restricting my ability to do that, that is out, feeling like it's out of my control, that's when the heaviness falls in. And it's interesting because I have a friend who is one of the top psychiatrists in the world. She's an amazing, amazing empath. And she and I were chatting about it, and she was describing her experiences with it. And I said, that's so amazing. I would think someone like you who is like so in that space. And she said, John, no. She said, everyone, Olympians, business people, celebrities, every day, we all go through this. This is part of the human story. And so what I think sometimes happens is that as we are progressing, if you think of life as just a perpetual playground, as we're learning, as we're getting better at separating ourselves from this, so I can hear my voice better, the algorithm is going, well, I don't think Laura's learning anything anymore. I don't think John is learning anything anymore. So let's ramp up the game. Let's make the challenge that much more intense. Let's make it seem so real that she is convinced that this is a real legitimate threat. And so there's times, literally, Laura, where I look up at the sky and I'm like, I get it. Can you just turn off the algorithm for a minute? I've learned the lesson, please. But I actually think there's some truth to that.
Yes, I agree.
You know, if we're going to continue to grow, then the game has to evolve.
The pressure is getting more, not less.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. If I know how to play chutes and ladders, then yeah, I have to start playing a different game. Yeah. Chutes and ladders isn't going to cut
level, it anymore. Level.
Yeah,
up.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. I agree 1,000%. And I think it's such an important conversation to be like vulnerable and to especially like someone like you, where people look up and it's like you're this amazing author and you have all those amazing thoughts. And I think especially people also like your friend, like the
psychiatrist.
Okay. Thank you. I think there's a reason why she's doing what she's doing. Yeah. I mean, she wouldn't be doing it if she wouldn't herself have experienced it and would, I assume. And
totally.
And so also for me, like I'm doing what I'm doing because I went like to the darkest places and I just was so desperately searching for light. And I just know that so many people are there in those really, really dark moments. And I think it's just so helpful to be honest and to be like, yeah, you know it, I know it, and there is a way out.
Yeah.
But the way out is first of all to sit with it and to be with it and to acknowledge it. And because by sitting with it, it's exactly what you just described. You understand like, okay, how did I get here?
Totally.
Like what was happening? And I think this is such a good advice. Like whoever is right now in a situation who is like in fear or in panic or like feeling helpless to accept, and maybe we can talk about resistance afterwards, to accept that you are there, not to try to get out of it. Because if you try to get out of it, like it's like a rubber band, it will come back.
And I would say by out of it, my definition of that would be you're just trying to cover it up.
Of course. So, you go like you watch a movie, you go drink, you do things that make you feel better.
Totally. Buy something to make you happy because the rest of it isn't working is a very temporary fix that, as you said, is going to circle back.
Yeah. And I think it's so important to really go there and ask yourself what happened right before.
Yeah.
Like what was happening that put me in the state of fear? And also, like, I can relate so much with it, like this, like the universe being like, okay, let's see, what can we give her to see?
And the funny thing is, like, because historically throughout time, religion was viewed as this, God was this powerful force that was vindictive. And I so view it in a different context. I almost view it as like, John, you made the agreement before you left wherever you came from, like you wanted to be challenged. We're just fulfilling the obligation that you signed up for, dude. Like, you can't change the game now.
The other day, I saw this super funny video, like this guy, and he's like acting as he would be like the guy you talk to before you go to Earth. And he's like, okay, you want to sign up for that? Like, sure. Okay. Right. That one as well. Okay. And he's like, yeah, I've been there before. All right. Okay. I write it down. And like, you want to read? need like the little side notes. No, it's okay. Yeah. Sure.
The disclaimer.
All right. The disclaimer. Okay. Well, check, you go.
Right. And yes.
I think this is how.
I didn't sign up for that one. Oh, yes, well, you did. It's right here on line 7. Yes, exactly.
You just didn't read it.
Didn't read the fine print. Exactly.
And I think also, like, I mean, we don't know if that is true, right? But I think if we just put ourselves like on the perspective, what if it is true?
Yeah.
I think it just helps so much to deal with difficult situations.
Totally. You're right. I can't know with 100% certainty it's true, but everything that I've learned in terms of what it feels like when my intuition is genuinely guiding me as opposed to a rational thought tells me that it is true. And I'm not sure that there's one answer for every single human on the planet. So it could be that people are going through and experiencing different versions of reality based on a different entry point, for all I know. But from my perspective, this is actually the way it's working for me in this particular lifetime.
Yeah. And what I also feel is, like you talked about this old picture of God, like this guy who's like giving directions kind of. And I think, no, it's just experiences we get. And we, like, the first thing we got is like our free will. Like, you can choose how you want to react. You can choose what, like, which meaning you want to give the situation. And I think this is probably the greatest gift we have, right? That whatever happens, you can choose the meaning you want to give to it, even though, I mean, it's really difficult sometimes.
Totally. And again, I keep, because it's funny, you find these things and they are major aha moments and then you keep circling back to them. And so you're right. It ties back to what we were just talking about, that, okay, you've sort of mastered this ability and just about the time you think you've got it all figured out, hey, there's a new challenge coming around the corner, which is going to really test your ability to trust the process, to listen to your intuition, whatever are the other foundational elements that you feel you've mastered. And the one big one that I go back to time and time again is this concept that I call the cosmic algorithm of the universe, that we have examples in everyday life. You get on Google and you type in purple gorilla 50 times and you're going to get an onslaught of purple gorilla information. And there's going to be videos and pictures and articles and the rest of that. And why? Because I'm demonstrating to the algorithm that this is my field of interest. This is what I care about. And so to me, this is what's going on every day, that everything I'm doing, everything I'm allocating my mental energy to is the equivalent of typing in purple gorillas. And so if I'm really unhappy with the outputs from the algorithm, a useful exercise is to say, oh, interesting. What inputs am I throwing in on a minute by minute basis? Not just through my actions, but through my thoughts, through what I give my attention to. And if this is true, which I genuinely think it's true, I think the game is constantly adjusting based on what my inputs are, then while there may be elements of this that are tied to the form that we've signed at the beginning, right? So maybe we signed up for all those things, but with that came the opportunity to change the game at any point if we figure out that our inputs will result in different outputs. And for me, that's been transformative, completely transformative.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah.
It's empowering
versus
feeling like the game is controlling you.
Yeah. You said that for this book, Zeit für Fragen im Café am Rande der Welt, like you had to be really honest and very vulnerable and opening up. And I feel that usually when we write books, first of all, we write them for ourselves.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
So what would you say gifted you this book?
The genesis of it was fans submitting the questions. And as you know, from our just friendship and from our discussions, et cetera, when I look at the early years of my life, I had no self-confidence. I had no sense of who I was in the world. I spent a lot of time in the dark pits of this can't be all that there is to the human experience. And so the fact that anyone on the planet thought that I had an answer to anything at that point would have been mind-blowing, first of all. And the fact that it would have come from a place of genuine compassion and care and a need. Like there was a person in pain who was reaching out and giving me the gift of possibly sharing something that I've learned during this life to help them alleviate the pain. Like, that is such an incredible gift. And I would say it is from that place that the book hit me. What if I could take these individual questions that I was getting and I was writing answers to, but I could give it enough thought and I could sit inside my own soul long enough that I could come up with an answer that maybe could help on a bigger perspective. Mm-hmm. And you're right. It required 100% like opening up my story. And I've done that at times, but not to the depth that people experience here. And I'm not saying it's all stuff that's going to be sad. It's all about the worst parts of my story. I hope there's parts in there that make you laugh out loud a lot. But without a doubt, one of the most common feedback things that I got, including from my editor, she said, wow, I learned about you and about your story in a way that I never knew before. And we've been working together for 20 years.
Mm. When you were answering the questions, I believe that a lot of people think that their stories are not worth to be told.
Yeah.
They feel like this is not like amazing enough or right. not like dramatic enough or like, so they don't tell their stories.
Yeah.
Did you sometimes had the feeling like, should I tell that story? Like, is that even worth to be told? Because I think it's so helpful also, you know, for them who are listening
yes.
to be like, no, we all have this like.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. I have a very funny story to tell you about the book as it relates to that, but I want to tell you something else first. So don't let me forget the word bananas. And so very early on in my writing, after I'd written the very first book, Das Café am Roundabout, someone invited me to come speak for the very first time. And the overarching feeling I had was like, who am I to stand on a stage? Like, I'm just me. Like, what you see is what you get. This is just me. I don't have any credentials or anything else to be standing on stage. But over time, what I have learned is the question is not for any of us, who am I to? The question is, who are we not to? Everybody has something to offer. Everybody has a gift. Everybody has something special, a story to share. And don't worry about whether it's going to impact a million people. Just think to yourself, if it was useful for you, if it helps just one person on the planet, total win. Total win. So as the questions were being submitted by fans, there were some that were obvious yes, because they were directly tied to questions I get a lot, like how do you discover your big five for life? Or what is the big five for life? Or what is the purpose of life? Those were obvious that I was going to spend my time on those. There were other ones, such as, do you ever find inspiration from fruit? Which I read and I was like, I don't think I have anything to offer in this category. And if I do, I don't think it's going to be significant enough that it's really worth putting out there. Like, I really want this to be something powerful. But to your question, sometimes you sit in the space of something that it takes you in a place you had no idea it was going to take you. And so here's where this question took me. Do you eat bananas?
I do.
Okay. So I have a banana issue, Laura.
Okay.
And here is my banana issue.
All right.
Because I like bananas and I eat them frequently, I typically buy them at the grocery store in like a 5-pack, right? I'll grab a bunch of them. The problem is I only eat typically one a day. And by day 4, my 5-pack that's left is down to 2 bananas that are looking a little bit old and they're showing some signs of aging. And typically I go to the grocery store every 2 or 3 days because I don't like to stockpile a bunch of stuff. And so since I'm there on day 3 and I see bananas and I know I've only got 2 left, I'll grab a bunch of bananas and bring them home. But now I have a problem on my hands because now I have a choice to make. I've got the brand new bananas who are looking perfect, right? They're yellow, ready to be eaten now. And I've got the 2 remaining bananas, which are starting to look worse by the minute. And so I have this emotional dilemma. I invested time and energy in these other bananas. I invested financial resources in these other bananas. Plus, I love the planet as you do. I don't want to be wasteful, right? These bananas had a life purpose, which was to grow and be eaten. If I don't eat them, I'm not allowing the banana to fulfill its greatest potential. And so all of this is going through my head. But at the same time, if I don't eat those 2 bananas now, Or if instead I start, shift my gears and eat the other bananas, if I eat the two bananas now that I'm looking at that are brown, the problem is what happens over those 2 days? Mm. Well, now the other bunch of bananas starts to get brown, right? This is all what's going on in my head. So
difficult dilemma.
Difficult dilemma. Exactly. You're talking about major life problems here, everybody. Yeah.
I think it's a big philosophy question.
It is. As you'll see in a second, there actually is something relevant to life.
I believe
about
this. You.
And so, but before we get there, let's continue to walk this path for a second, because I don't know about you, but sometimes what will happen is I look at the bananas that are half brown and I think to myself, oh, that person told me one time that if I put them in the fridge, it extends their life. So I put it in the fridge, but when you put a banana in the fridge, it gets totally brown. I don't know if you've ever done it. Like totally brown.
Yes.
It looks more disgusting than it ever looked when it was on the table. So now what happens is you open the fridge looking for a snack, you see the bananas and you're like, anything but that, right? And so you never actually eat the ones that are in the refrigerator, even though that was the whole goal. So this is the thought that is running through my head as I'm looking at this question of, do you ever find inspiration from fruit? And here was the big aha associated with this. It doesn't just apply to fruit, that sometimes we invest in things, whether it is a job, a relationship, a project, anything. And we put our time into it. We put our financial resources into it. We put our best efforts into it. And then it doesn't go the way we thought it was going to go. And we have a decision to make. Are we going to keep trying to extend the life out of it, to extract a tiny bit more value from it? Or are we going to allow ourselves the grace to just say, it didn't work out the way I thought it was going to, and I'm going to open up that space for something else? And interestingly, when I was doing my live events for the book, I asked people, how many of you have a piece of clothing in your closet that you have not worn for 3 years and you know you will not wear for another 3 years? Because when you look in the closet and you're selecting something, you're like, nah, right? But you bought it and you invested in it and you're emotionally connected to it, so you just don't get rid of it. Mm. And I think the big aha from this particular question that there are lots of these different things in our lives. Mm. And the great opportunity is to allow ourselves to donate the piece of clothing, cut the cord in the banana when it's there, or make banana bread out of it. So repurpose it somehow.
Smoothie.
Make a smoothie out of it. Yeah, that's sort of like donating, right? It's like, I'm not going to wear this, so I'll donate it to someone who might. Yeah. That banana is past its prime for just consumption, so we'll repurpose it for a smoothie, something. But I think in life, oftentimes we hang on to these things that in truth, the best opportunity is to let it go. Forgive ourselves, maybe if we made a mistake with it, and just move on.
Mm, true.
Yeah.
Very true. Yeah. Good. Good. Who knew that would
thought?
Be the answer
who
to such
thought?
A question? Yeah.
Yeah. So the other piece of that, because there's two parts to that story. Yeah. This question elicited a lot from my brain.
Maybe it was sent in by an orange or something.
Yeah, exactly. Orange Growers of America in Germany would like to know, where are you finding your fruit inspiration, John Strzelecki? But the other one was when I was like 3 years old, and it's funny how you can distinctly remember some moments and very few others, but some moments from your childhood. But I was like 3 years old, we were visiting some friends and they had peach trees on their property and it was the summertime. And so my parents let me actually pick a peach from the tree and eat it just like that. Like no grocery store, no nothing, just like pick it and eat it. And it was a nice warm summer day. And I distinctly remember being amazed, A, at how sweet it was coming from the tree, and B, that it was warm. I had never eaten a warm peach before. But as a three-year-old, as you would know, because you have young kids, you bite into that peach and it's just like flowing everywhere, you know? And so this went from being one of the most amazing moments of my young life to, oh my gosh, like
I am a peach.
Yeah, I am covered in peach juice. And it's sticky instantly. And I remember like I was doing this with my hands and that didn't work. So then I rubbed them on the grass, which is a nightmare. And so I went from being so happy to so sad. And somehow I learned that, or somebody told me, or I just realized. So I went to the hose tap and I turned it on and I washed my hands with the water. And to this day, I can remember being blown away that in seconds, my state could change. I went from miserable to being happy. And so the other thing I write about in there is that with the right input, our state can change in a second. The question to ask ourselves is, what is it that I need to bring into my life to allow the unhappiness to just wash away.
And also, I mean, the beautiful thing here is that sometimes we get something we think we like and it turns into something we really don't like. Yeah. So you're really happy, then you're really unhappy. I mean, the best example is like, you don't have 50 euros. I give you 50 euros. Now you're really happy. You lose the 50 euros. You're more unhappy than you were before when you also didn't have the 50 euros because you just had it.
So true.
So sometimes we get something, we think we like it, then we don't like it. And then we need to take ourselves out of that state. And I feel that children are the masters of changing emotions instantly. I mean, it's just, it's so beautiful, right? They can cry, they love, they cry, they love, they're angry, they sad, they everything, like in 1 minute. And I think this is so beautiful where we as adults actually can go back to allow ourselves, especially to get out of the negative emotions more quickly if there is the space for it. So what would you say helps us to let go the resistance towards good emotions? Because there's a little bit something in ourselves, right, that like sometimes to be within the negative.
I've shared sometimes I can know what's making me angry, going back to that emotion, and sometimes I can identify exactly what the fear is, and I'm like, I just want to be angry.
It just feels good.
I know it doesn't feel good in that moment, but I just, for whatever reason, I'm like, no, I just want to be in that state. Like, I just feel justified in being in that state or whatever. But to your question of what can we do to allow ourselves to move from those, I find that preloading my awareness is a great technique. And so one of the things that happens that creates the emotion is that our mind is focused on a thought. And if we're not careful, it will circle on that thought a thousand times. You know, it'll go back to it. And so in that moment, if you have a mental redirect that you can adjust it to, that is incredibly effective. But it doesn't work so good if you don't think about it ahead of time. Like, if you're already frustrated and then you're like, oh, where can I mentally redirect to? Forget it. Like, it's really hard. But if you can set yourself up with even something as simple as a three-word mantra, you know, I am happy, I am healthy, I am free. I am happy, I am healthy, I am free. And the minute the mind wants to circle in this pattern of frustration, anger, sadness, depression, whatever, instead, you just simply start saying, either out loud or in your mind, I am happy, I am healthy, I am free. And you just stay with it. And you're gonna, it's gonna be like a point of conflict. Like, the other thoughts and emotions are gonna wanna try and get their space in there. But if your mind is just focused on those three things, at some point, the other stuff dissipates. And I think it was Eckhart Tolle in A New Earth talks about ducks. And he says, when ducks fight each other in a pond, at the end of the fight, they flap their feathers really, and they sort of get it all out of their system. And then they happily are swimming along in the pond, and they're like, they're buddies again. And to me, this redirect is what is the equivalent of like flapping your wings.
And also mantra, like the meaning of it, to give like an instrument to the mind.
Yes.
It can work with to redirect itself. Would you say that one of the greatest powers we have as human beings is to be able to direct our minds?
Yeah, one of my personal big five for life is to master mind over matter. At a super high level, you know, there's glasses in front of us and those look like they're solid. You could tap it, it feels solid. But the truth is it's not, it's a liquid. It's just moving so slowly that it appears to be solid. And everything is composed of protons, neutrons, and electrons. And so if I start to view the world in that context, I realize that I'm never actually out of control. That if I just learn how to manipulate the protons, neutrons, and electrons, which involves also my thoughts, that I can actually be the game maker, not just a player in the game, or at least a co-game maker. Also with the person who we signed the form with, they're probably helping out with the game too.
They're giving you the matrix.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And so for me, mastering mind over matter, mastering our thoughts is one of the single greatest foundational elements that you can do.
How is it going?
Well, it's something that literally took me until I was probably 40 to even recognize as an important piece of the human experience. And then there were two key things that did it for me. I can't remember if we've talked about this, but the use of a personal mantra is a complete game changer for me. That was when, before I had that, I would constantly find myself drifting back to moments 20 years ago, a negative experience, conversation that didn't go well, and I would be replaying this in my head, but I would be perfecting my side of the conversation.
Of course.
Yeah. As if somehow, someday, I was going to meet that person again and be like, hey, do you remember back when I was in fourth grade and you called me a super silly dumbass? I'm not a super, like, I mean, come on, right? But this was such an everyday part of my reality that this is how I filled large blocks of time with my mental space.
Just here, I would just like to pause for a second, and everyone listening right now, just check in. What is the conversation you still have in your head with that person 5, 10, 50 years ago where you still want to win the argument?
Yeah.
Like the moment is gone. Like it's done. Yeah. Let it go.
Yeah. And if you're like me, you're going to have to find a whole suite of those conversations because it wasn't just one. Like standing in line at the grocery store or sitting at a stoplight, my mind would come up with a whole bunch of them that I could replay in the best of series.
And it's so funny, right? We are like in the most peaceful moment, like in our bed, but in our head, we are in war. We are like really fighting this argument. It's like, and find the error.
I don't know if it is the quest for perfection. I don't think so. I think it's the underlying cause of that conversation is that you feel inferior. You feel like you're not worthy. You don't feel like you're capable. And so you're trying to remove that element of the storyline so that you can be capable. But the truth is, again, it's 20 years in the past.
I think what could help is to what I always do. Like I have a really good relationship to my future self. So I think what is always nice, like to kind of like I rescued myself, like my future self rescued my past self, like from, let's say, 300 situations. So I literally in my mind, in my meditation, I go to that situation and I rescue myself from
That's
it.
Awesome.
I take myself. I go like, we leave the situation. Now you come with me. I take care of you. Let's get out of here.
I love that.
And I take her and I bring her out of the room. I bring her into my car and I drive her home into my heart. So, and I think this is something that, as you said, that the problem is not the conversation. The problem is that we didn't feel safe in the conversation and that there is still unhealed emotional trauma probably, and that you need to heal that moment instead of trying to win it. Because the winning is not being better. The winning is being with you and taking care of yourself.
Absolutely. So that's a great example. And then I love that because that's something very different from what I do. And that tells me that for each of us, there is something that's going to be particularly effective. For anybody who's watching or listening, feel free to try either one of these. And then if these don't work for you, figure out something else that works for you. I have something similar, but it's not my future self. I have a relationship with my unconscious self, the observer of my reality. And so it's Sophocles, I have named it, and it's the entity that I am in constant collaboration with. And so when I have the drift back, when I used to, because I'm significantly better at it now, but when I have the drift back moment, I will say, thank you, Sophocles, for reminding me of that. We're actually good on that one. Like we can stop replaying that one in our mind.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. Same sort of spirit, I think, that I hear in yours.
Yeah. It's exactly the same spirit. It's just like this higher, more calm knowing that it's like, you're okay.
Yeah.
Like you were safe. Let's fix that.
Yeah.
Like, let's get out of there.
So to me, having the mantra element where you can do the mental redirect is incredibly useful. I would say in complete transparency, it took me 90 days to go from this completely unsupportive, destructive behavior. And it was a hockey stick kind of thing. Like at the start, I was so bad at it. Like I would mental redirect and literally 15 seconds into the mental redirect, I was back in the conversation, you know, like, and then you catch yourself and you're just like, what the heck? Like, what am I doing? But after 90 days, then when you have a quiet moment, you find that you automatically are on the mental redirect. You're automatically on the positive thing. Mm. And that's when the whole game changes at that point.
And I think it's really important that you mention it, first of all, because it's important to be very mindful with yourself, like to not blame yourself that it's not working instantly, because
Totally.
Your brain is wired to go back there. Yeah. So you wired yourself 40, 50 years to go back to that conversation. So you will give you have to give your brain some time to rewire. And
100%.
I mean, thank God there is neuroplasticity. Yes. So it can change. That's the good news, but it needs time. It's like a broken leg, like give it some time to heal. And then the thing comes off and you can walk again, but like give yourself some time. I think that's important. And I will quickly get my phone because we have always a question from the community in the podcast, and I will ask it and the question, and we can answer it together. Okay. So the question is from Kerstin, and Kerstin says, "Dear Laura, how do you deal with FOMO, the fear of missing out? Do you have any tips? Thank you so much." So in German, die Frage wäre, wie gehe ich mit FOMO um, also der Angst, irgendwas zu verpassen? Yeah, so what are your thoughts on it?
It's interesting. This goes back on a very big level. This goes back to what we were talking about on an individual level. Mm. This is, as more and more has happened over the last 25 years in the field of self-development, the concepts and ideas that we're talking about have gone from being a very tiny section of the bookstore where you had to ask someone, where is the self-development section? And as a friend of mine was sharing at dinner last night, he's like, you know, it used to be you'd walk back there and you sort of felt embarrassed, like, oh, self-development, what's wrong with me that I have to go and find help, you know? But this has become so mainstream now that we're actually having conversations that this is the way to actually live a happy life. This is the way to enable yourself to achieve the experiences that you want to have. It has become fantastically, beautifully mainstream. And so I think that the game, and then a lot of that is, you know, you allowing yourself to say, okay, I'm in this place of darkness. How do I get out? And then putting yourself on the stage of life to say, I'm going to share this with other people. And I'll throw myself in that same category with the books that I write because they are for me first. These are the challenges that I've dealt with. And so I think the game, the algorithm says, well, it's a lot easier for people these days to find out these things. So what can I do to put a balancing act in this to still make it complex and challenging? I know. Why don't I give Steve Jobs the concept of a smartphone? Because that'll really screw up the system for a while, right? And so you create the great democratization of information. Now anyone can have a platform for anything. And so now there is literally a billion distractions out there to keep you from having a conscious thought. Mm. Perfect. This will really keep everybody on their toes for a while. And so in conjunction with that, you have an ever-ending opportunity to go do anything, which is where FOMO comes from. So I think I want to do this, but then there's 26 other options that come across my screen literally in a 60-second blip.
Mm. And how can I then decide what to do?
What's amazing about this is it goes back to the same core principles. Mm. You go inside. Mm. So I'll give some very tactical everyday type of things, but at the end of the day, it's going inside and looking for that intuitive connection. And I would love to spend a couple of minutes talking about what that feels like for you, that intuitive feeling, because I think that's something that people struggle with when they're trying to open up that channel. So if you can remind me of that, because I want to ask you about that. But from a tactical perspective, it can be as simple as looking back over the last year and saying, when did I feel most alive? Mm. And what was it about that experience that made me feel most alive? Was it who I was with? And so really what I'm missing in my life is community. Was it the particular activity that I was doing? Because that is something that really makes me feel like I'm fulfilling my purpose or having fun, like genuinely having fun, like a child has fun. Was it the environment that I was in? Oh, that's when we were at the beach, or that's when we were in Hawaii, or that's when we were at the concert. So was there something about the destination that made you feel, now I'm in my sweet spot of life? Asking these types of tactical questions can be great clues to enable you to then make sustainable changes in your life going forward. I can't tell you the number of beautiful conversations I've had over the last 7 days as I've been on tour, where someone comes up to me and they say, thank you so much for the cafe book that changed my life. And I say, awesome. Thank you so much for sharing what changed. Mm. And they say either I changed my job, I changed where I live, or I changed a major relationship in my life. And so that's them doing that retroactive look at, when was I happier? And now I'm going to change something on one of these main categories to get back to that.
Mm. Beautiful. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think for me, FOMO, I don't know, I never really had it, I think. It's a difficult concept for me to relate to.
Me too. And I wonder if it's because we didn't grow up with smartphones.
That's a good question.
Like we knew the other side.
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah. I like for me, I think it really is because I believe FOMO maybe also comes a little bit from expectations we put on ourselves, what we are supposed to do or not to do, or where we are supposed to show up or like be. And I think an advice I could give is to look at the expectations you have towards yourself, what you think, how you have to behave, where you have to be, where you have to go. I'm very, very cautious with where I go, what I do with my time. For example, we just talked about it before, like my priority are my kids. Yeah. Like this is my first priority and I don't have, I mean, there's so many things. I live in Berlin. Like I could FOMO my life off kind of because like every night there is something right. For example, we were supposed to be at dinner yesterday night and I couldn't go because I chose to bring my kids to bed and I could be like, oh no, I couldn't be there. And of course, like I would have loved to, but I know like for me, my most important thing is to bring my kids to bed. And and I think this is something that could help with FOMO to just check in and be like, what are my values? Like who I am really? Who am I really? I think this is an important question. Like who are you? Where, what fills you up if you go there? Like does it give you something or can you contribute in a way? And I think it has a lot to do with being connected to yourself because if you're not, you're like all the time like, oh, I should go there and maybe then this happens. And, so this is the one side of FOMO. And on the other side, I think if you feel a strong yes to do something, you should do it.
Totally.
Like this is, I have so many situations in my life where I was like one quick story I tell because this is one of the most important things that happened in my life. So through many coincidences, So I was in a train from my university. It was raining. It was cold. It was winter. And I was working back then at a PR firm. And they had their Christmas dinner. And they texted me and be like, do you want to join for the Christmas dinner? And I was like, no, I really don't feel like going there.
Yeah.
But connecting to my inner voice, I had this little, like, you should go. Like, even though you don't want to go, like, from it's cold and there are, like, many
the
reasons.
The rational perspective.
The rational. Yeah. I had this, you should go. And I was like, okay, I go. So I went there. There I sat down next to a man who was working for a sports company. And they were doing, like, this running group. And we were talking to each other. And he was like, you should actually really join this running group. And I was like, I'm like really not a runner, like really not a runner, but all right. So next day he texted me and he was like, tonight is the meeting of the running group. Again, I was like really don't feel like running in the cold and rain, like, but I had this little voice that was like, you should go there.
Yeah.
So I went there. Guess who I met? I was running next to a girl. Her name is Dominique. You just met her. She became my best friend. And we were just like, we met there. We were running next to each other and we were both like this, not really fitting into this running group. And we were connecting instantly. And this is like 15 years back. And since then we are best friends.
Yeah.
So imagine I wouldn't have listened to that inner voice telling me you should go. And I think so there's this thin line between going, not going, doing, not doing. And the best advice I could give you is to really listen to that sweet inner voice as like, go.
Yeah.
Or don't go. I mean, I also have
sometimes it's like, don't go.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. What amazes me about this is, because I think this is one of the huge pieces also of the foundation, this willingness to listen to that inner voice.
And to trust it.
And to trust it. Yeah. Even when you can't understand why it's telling you something.
Yeah.
That is one of the pieces that takes a while to get more and more comfortable with. But I will say, it begins often with small things. And so if you allow yourself to trust that with small things, then it seems like the system is like, oh, he's listening. Now we'll start sending the bigger things.
Mm.
what amazes me about it and what I can't wait to figure out the way in which it actually works is you're getting the pings ahead of time. Mm. It's like the perfect demonstration that time is not linear. It actually knows what's going to happen, or the if not exactly what's going to happen, it knows the field of potential that is going to open if you do this or if you don't do this. And that is just wicked cool to me.
Yeah, that's true. It's all interconnected. And I think if we, what you said, if we master the mind over matter game, and if we really trust the mind and the spirit and like the frequencies and vibrations we feel, and with our like little antennas, we just recognize them, life gets so amazing and magical and divine. And I think this is just a beautiful space where we can live from.
It may be the single greatest element in terms of overcoming fear, actually,
yeah, it's true.
Now that you're describing that. Because if you genuinely felt like you were constantly connected to an infinite source of information that was available to guide you on your decision making, then you wouldn't look at FOMO as a problem because you would sense that, well, this is what I'm feeling called to do. And so although rationally this other one looks interesting, I'm okay with that because clearly there's going to be something behind door number one that is relevant to me living the life that I want to live.
Yeah. So talking about magical, so I have this new thing in my interviews where I have different cards.
Okay.
So there is an ancestor cards, angel cards, and animal spirit cards. And you can pick a card for yourself.
Okay.
Which would also be a message that goes out to the people listening. So you can just choose one card, whatever you feel connected to. And you can look at it and share it if you want to. And maybe if you have a thought with it.
Yeah, I mean, it couldn't be more perfect. So I don't know if you want to see it.
Oh, yeah. Perfect. It's drum. The
dream, dream and journey dream are the words that are on there. Yeah.
Fellow traveler.
Yeah.
Gets the dream and journey card, of course.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Again, thinking back to these kids that are hanging out at my house all the time, it's allow yourself to think big, allow yourself to dream big, because I am living proof that the impossible can potentially become possible if you allow yourself to trust that intuition, if you allow yourself to get out on the great adventure and to experience all that's out there. So, yeah.
Okay. I quickly read it. Okay.
Oh, cool. There's more to it.
Yes. Okay. The message is journey inwards to discover insights and information that will be important for your path. I think the cards were listening to our conversations. Then follow with the guidance. In the shamanic traditions, in all four corners of the world, the drum is recognized as the main tool used by medicine men and women to direct their will and aid meditation. A drumbeat can become hypnotic and send those listening into an altered state that can allow them to journey to the spiritual realms and meet their guides. When the drum card appears in a reading, there are opportunities for you to dream or to bring an inner vision into reality. Extended message. You are very connected to the other worlds at this time. The wisdom and intelligence of the earth and her magic surrounds you. The drum, which echoes the sound of Mother Earth's heartbeat, has cleared the cobwebs. Do you say cobwebs? Mm-hmm. And thus from your inner vision. What you have seen in your dreams and inner vision is not imagination, but guidance, particularly if it has been coming to you repeatedly and has the potential to become reality. Dreams come true, know it and live it. That's beautiful. Yeah. The cards are always listening. It's interesting, right? How it's always so connected.
Yeah. And I guess on some level, it shouldn't surprise us, but yet it continues to surprise us because even when we're in that space, and maybe that's the childlike innocence that is still within us, that we expect it to be there because we're doing our best to get connected in this way. And then when it appears, we're still super excited about it.
Yeah, it's beautiful. So what was the question that was the one that was in your book, Zeit für Fragen im Café am Rande der Welt? What was the question that was for you that has like the most healing potential for you when you answered it, or the most surprising or the most valuable question? Maybe
I think two things come to mind with that. One is the remembering. So the questions sort of fell into four categories. There were ones that were deeply philosophical. So what is the purpose of life? What is the cosmic algorithm of the universe? There were ones that were more tactical. How do I find more happiness in my life? How do I know when it's time to change a job or change a relationship? There were ones about my life, like what are your favorite places to travel or how did you become an author? And then there were the more unusual ones, like the fruit one. But I think what struck me in the whole experience was that if I allowed myself to trust the process, that the right story would come through me. It's a little bit like the FOMO thing that I think I could have started the process and been worried that, oh, well, how do I know if what I'm sharing is really the answer that's going to help the person who submitted the question? But I've been lucky enough to have the experiences I've had with the books or with the card, same spirit, that when it just feels and flows through me, I'm 100% convinced, A, that it's coming from somewhere beyond me. And my job is just to add whatever flavor I want to add to it, and that it's going to be the right message for the right person at the right time. So the experience of writing it and all of the different questions really were validation of that. Because there were some that I had no idea when I looked at the question, what was going to come through here, you know? And again, sometimes it was deeply personal stuff that I haven't thought about in a long time. Mm. Sometimes it was the chance to write something in a funny way, because I try and add humor in my other books too, but it's the voice of a character and it's not, I would say, persistently prevalent in the stories. But again, I would hope that someone who reads this, and I don't suggest anyone read it straight through, it's like way too dense and way too deep. But I would hope that over the course of a month of someone reading that, that they would laugh out loud a good dozen times. I hope so anyway.
That's amazing. It's beautiful. Thank you for writing it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know the question that comes now, right? I mean, you've been so often in the podcast and I'm excited to hear what's your answer now. So imagine you live a very, very long, beautiful, happy life. And one day that will be the last day of your life. And I would be there.
Hi, Laura.
Hey, John. How you doing? And I would tell you, so all your books are deleted. It's all gone. Nothing left. But here's a white sheet of paper and a pen. And you could write down three things you would like the world to remember. Mm. Three wisdoms, three advices. What would you write down today?
Interesting, because there is a question in the book that is similar to that. I was like, if you could only leave the world with one thought, what would it be? Mm. And as I was contemplating that, thinking about that, something came to me. So I'll use one of those as one of them. And it was write your own rules.
Mm.
And
oof, I love that.
Yeah. So I remember when you used to watch shows as a kid with a genie and they would give three wishes. And I would always be like, wait, why don't you make wish number one? Every time I get down to one wish, I get 1,000 more wishes. And that requires writing your own rules. And I realized at this point in my life that part of the game of life is learning to write your own rules. Mm. Because at a young age, you are sometimes through good intentions, you are given belief systems and a lens through which you look at the world that may not serve you the best as you were adding your contributions, as you were living an extraordinary life. And that will require at some point you looking at the rules and saying, which ones do I want to rewrite?
What is a rule for you have in your life?
A rule for me would be that you actually can chart your own destiny, and it requires first and foremost your own level of conviction that you don't require 100% external to drive the show. Yeah.
Beautiful.
I would say in conjunction with that one, so a sister or a cousin to that one, would be challenge every belief that you think you hold. And again, so many of those are integrated at a young age before you have the discernment to figure out whether that belief is actually true. And so with literally everything that you think is true, just allow yourself a minute to say, why do I think that's true? And do I still think it's true? Because that can be the thing that is keeping you from the life that you want to live, the relationship that you want to have. You know, someone who grows up with a belief system that they are not worthy of a relationship is going to go through a very tough time eventually finding love for themselves and the ability to love others. And so, yeah, challenge every belief that you hold. And let's see, the very last thing. Ooh, I have two things that come to mind. So
you get four. It's okay.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, I have this vision that just came to me of a blank piece of paper and a pen and that you get to write it. Mm. Like you're the author. Mm. And so Yeah, I'm cheering up thinking about this. So I think this is the one. Your life will be a reflection of the story that you write for yourself. Mm-hmm. So define it how you want, write it how you want, and then live it. Yeah, that must be it, because I think the reason that one hits me so hard is because that's one that took me forever to learn. Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you for sharing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you. Ah, John.
We cried our way through the last interview. I was like, no, don't worry about it for this one. This is like silly fruit questions and fun conversations and the rest of that. We don't have to worry about a box of tissues on this one.
Thank you so much for everything you do. Thank you for being such a light, but also deep spirit, and for just bringing you on the table every time and being so real and honest and vulnerable and healing for all of us. So just thank you for everything you do, for every word you write, for just being you in your like completely individual self, soul. And I'm so grateful for you and for every conversation we always have. Thank you.
Well, right back at you. You know, I had a interesting thought, which I think ties into this closing. And that is, in the 1800s in the United States, when someone was embarking on a great adventure and they would head off to the plains, at some point they were looking to build structure. So we've been talking about foundation, but they were looking to build structure, and it was a barn. And a single family did not have the means or the resources to build a barn. It was just too big of a project. And so they would gather the community together. And so 10 families would get together on one weekend and help each other build a barn for family number one. And then the next weekend, those same 10 families would go to a different piece of land and they would help that family build their barn. And this would go on until the community had helped each person build the foundation that they could then have the life that they wanted to live. And so very early in the process, I realized that one of the great joys of spending time with you is that's the way I feel. Like you're doing a project. I want to help you because I believe in you and I like you as a human being. And I know you come from a beautiful place and you are always so gracious and inviting me on the show, just being the beautiful person that you are. And I really like this idea, not just for us and our little community, but for everybody who's out there, to see if you can build that little community of support system so that you can help each other build that foundation for yourselves.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
So we build a little Café am Rande des Welt barn and a little Happy, Holy, and Confident barn.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
We should do like, that would be amazing if we would have like Disneyland, but for personal development, like you can go into like the Café am Rande der Welt or into the Happy, Holy, and Confident world, or like, oh, that would be so cool.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you have like a big like roller coaster through all of it.
I like it.
Let's
like
dream it. Big.
So a friend of mine is involved with Lego and he asked me, he said, would you ever like to have a Lego that is the cafe on the edge of the world?
That would be so cool.
I know. And I saw him recently a couple of days ago and I was like, hey, I really am getting excited about that idea. So we'll see.
That's amazing. I love that.
If it happens, then I'll tell him like, listen, I got this friend who wants to do this Happy, Holy, Confident. Like, yeah, it would be an awesome little
one. I was actually just building yesterday 3 hours of Lego with my son. So I'm like, my father was here and he was like, you are so fast in building Lego. And I was like, yeah, like actually I spent the last 6 years
building Legos.
Building Lego. So I'm actually pretty good. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you. Awesome. Thank you so much.
Willkommen zurück aus dieser Folge. Ich hoffe, du hast ganz viel für dich mitgenommen. Wie immer, teil diese Folge so, so gerne mit deinen Lieblingsmenschen. Schick sie raus über WhatsApp, über wo auch immer mit du kommunizierst. Abonnier diesen Podcast. Folge mir so gerne auf iTunes, auf Spotify, auf YouTube. Einfach kurz auf Folgen oder Abonnieren klicken. Lass natürlich so gerne auch einen Kommentar und ein bisschen Liebe-Sprinkle da. Und du findest mich auch auf Instagram @LauraMarlinaSeiler. Und wir hören uns nächste Woche mit einer neuen Folge. Es ist so schön, dass es dich gibt. Fühl dich von Herzen umarmt. Rock on und Namaste. Deine Laura.